about today's topic, call us at 773-488-9552. And now, here are your hosts, Derek McNeil and Charles Young, with the all-new Consumer's Eye on WKKC 89.3 FM.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to the all-new Consumer's Eye. I'm Derek McNeil.
And I'm Charles Young.
Each and every Saturday morning right here on WKKC 89.3 FM, we bring you an exciting show full of information, full of facts and figures. If you're having a problem with a bank, with a currency exchange, if you're having a problem with a hospital or a doctor, the Consumer's Eye is the show for you. Even if you're having a problem with a lawyer, that's going to be our topic, in which we won a national award from the nation's legal reform organization, HALT. It's going to be our topic the third week of May, third Saturday of May, how to sue your lawyer, which the Consumer's Eye, we've gotten a lot of good praise and recognition for that show that we've done, I believe, for 2 years now, How to Sue Your Lawyer. So stay tuned for that. This morning, we're going to have an exciting show full of information. We're going to begin by talking about, what is a professional life coach, and do you need a life coach? Then our second half, we're going to talk about foreclosures and what you can do with regards to a foreclosure defense, not just filing bankruptcy, as so many people are advised to do, which gets them into more and more trouble. Before I begin, though, I just want to point out, thank God for Al Sharpton. Tell you why. Reverend Sharpton went to jail this week regarding the Sean Bell shooting, where the police shot a unarmed civilian in New York. They shot, and there were more than 50 bullets that were recovered from the scene, killed this man on his a day before he was scheduled to get married, and somehow the police were acquitted of these charges. And we find that all over the country, it's just horrible what's happening to what's happening with regards to police shootings and this brutality that our citizens in the nation are subjected to. So we're going to be keeping our eye on that case, as well as a lot of the stuff that happens here in Chicago. And in June, we do a show about how to make a complaint against the police department and follow up with that complaint and so forth. In any event, we're delighted and honored to have joining us Miss Simone Peer. Simone happens to be a professional life coach, a certified life coach. She has extensive experience in training and coaching professionals, businesses, entrepreneurs, etc. Simone also happens to be serving in its current term as the president of the Network of Women Entrepreneurs. So we're going to talk about the network in our latter part of the show. I'm going to begin by welcoming you, Simone, to the Consumer's Eye radio show.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Why don't you begin by telling us just what is a life coach?
It's funny, because as I was sitting here, I thought, wow, a life coach is like your own Jiminy Cricket. It's rather than being just a conversationalist in your own head, it's somebody who you can have conversations with about what you really want for in your life. One of the things that I really do is I listen for what's beneath and behind what it is that you're saying, so that you can get really clear about what you want in life, and then we can figure out how to make it so.
Now, that sounds a little bit like a psychologist. Is there a difference between a professional life coach and a traditional psychologist or licensed clinical social worker?
Some easy ways to consider that are, coaches focus on the present and the future. So if there are things that have happened in your past, you might speak to them, but we don't ask questions around why or looking to the past. We just take it as a fact and figure out where you are now and move on. And so what I look for in distinguishing the difference is if a client is really stuck, if there's something from perhaps their family of origin or events in their past that really prevent them from moving on, then I know I need to refer them to another professional. I'm sure there are a lot of similarities, but just some of the basics, I think, really stay there.
Okay, interesting. Now, who are your clients? Who do you generally see, or are they called clients or patients?
They're clients or coachees.
Coachees, okay. And you're the coacher.
I am the coach, and they are the coachee.
Okay. So tell us about, give us some examples of the type of people that you see, their age range, their occupations, why they're there to see you.
I've got a fantastic array of clients. The demographics are pretty unusual. They range in age from teenagers through 80s. Men, women, married, single, gay, straight, executives, management level, independent professionals, entrepreneurs. I would say a lot of what I'm really attracting and working with now are people who I affectionately call strange rangers in suits. They get things at levels that a lot of other people don't, and they're trying to figure out how to be themselves, how to be a little bit wacky in the world, and comfortable trusting who they are. I've got a lot of small business owners. I also work with a lot of folks in relationship. And
let's stop right there for a moment. Okay. Relationship. Define that for us on why a individual or individuals would come to see you regarding some sort of relationship coaching.
On one hand, it could be that they aren't really socially comfortable and don't know how to build relationships with others. Could be their team, their staff, anybody that they might interact with in the world. And then there's also intimate relationships. And I have worked with people from being single to begin dating to attract partners, to get married, to have children. I've also coached folks through divorce and really anywhere in between. And not even just through divorce, people who are in marriages or in couples situations to have more intimate and happier relationships as well.
Interesting. Now, are there any guidelines or regulations with regards to coaching? Are there licensing requirements, etc.?
Currently, there are no state nor federal guidelines in terms of certification or licensure. However, the coaching industry, in order to really create itself as an industry, set up overseeing bodies. So there's the International Coach Federation. And what they have done is established codes of conduct, ethics, and core competencies and standards for practice. They are an international association that accredits coach training institutions as well as administer certification for coaches.
Yeah, I see all of these acronyms behind your name. I take it that that's what that deals with, correct?
They're one of several coaching certifications I have.
Very good. Now, going back just a moment to the entrepreneur, and you coaching the entrepreneur, what reasons would a entrepreneur seek out a life coach?
Entrepreneurs generally have lots of ideas that they're focused on. So often they can be all over the map, and they're not necessarily accomplishing anything really well. So an entrepreneur struggling for success, I would help them really focus on the things that are really most true, right, and important for them right here, right now, and make that happen. They are so creative. They've got so many ideas. I don't do a lot of talking with them, do a lot of listening, help them listen to themselves, and then really hone in on what they're best at, as well as getting support. They can't do it all. They need to bring in, you know, all hands on deck to make their dreams come true.
A good point, Charles.
How do you convince someone that they're this jack of all trades, that they really need somebody on board on their team to really get this ball rolling here? How do you convince them? You say you listen to them, see exactly what their strengths and weaknesses are, and how do you at some point convince them that they need someone else on board to really help them out?
I think what it is really is getting them to see what's working and what's not working, getting them to define success, getting them to give up some control, realizing that sometimes something just has to be good enough,
okay,
not perfect.
And in defining success, I mean, everyone has their own definition of what success is. As a coach, how would you define success relative to your clients or coachees?
Actually, you just said it. They define their own success.
Okay.
Yeah, so what I do is I help them clarify, identify, and define what success means to them, and then we know what to work toward.
Okay. So in setting that barometer, do you continue to coach them along the way once they've define that level of success? Do you coach them along the way to help them maintain that level of success?
It could be. It could be that while we're on the path to success, we find out that there's some foundational issues. So it might be that we're just filling cracks, plugging holes. We might be refining what their vision is, and they might find along the way, that's not really what I wanted. So we go back, we tweak, we keep moving. So let's say once they achieve their goal, reach their dream, the thing is they keep moving. They don't just stop. Life doesn't stop there. So either they can move on and just practice who they're being and have the tools that work for them, and they can continue on their own and maybe come back, you know, every couple months for a little tweak, a little polishing.
Okay.
Or they might have then a next level that they want to become, more goals, and so then we can work on achieving, you know, what they want for next.
You're listening to The Consumer's Eye. This morning we're talking with Simone Peer. Simone is a professional certified life coach. Now, for those who are listening to the show this morning, I'm sure that one of their questions would be, what are the fees to see a life coach? Are they as much as the psychologist? And I guess being on my show, we would ask, are they tax deductible? So why don't you give us a range of the fees that life coaches charge, and how do they actually see a client?
Well, I'll answer the tax deductible as best I know first. If you're a business owner and you're being coached on your business, I believe that would be consulting with a professional expert.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it is tax deductible.
I would agree with that.
And beyond that, fees can really range. In terms of working with the coach, you might be working with a newer coach who might charge somewhere around $75 a session. Executive coaching might start at around $400 a session. My coaching, I range from about $100 to $250 a session. And the reason I have such a big range is I've actually stepped out on a limb to do something pretty wacky, and that is values-based exchange. And I really strive to bring value to that conversation. And so what I ask my coachee to consider is what is this worth to you? So I used to tell them what my pay range was, and I found they paid me less. And when I stopped telling them what my pay range was and I just honed in on the value, they started to pay me more, which is how my range started to grow. They showed me really the value that I was delivering.
Another question that is not on my checklist, but what would be the environment of a coach and the coach and the client? Is this like a psychologist office, or what's the environment there?
I do about 99.9% of my coaching on the phone. So I ask my coachee to be somewhere where they will be uninterrupted. It's comfortable and quiet for them, and that they can pay full attention to themselves, to the conversation. Me, I sometimes sit out in my yard on the hammock. I sit in my office, put my feet up in the window, wherever I feel I want to be,
okay,
so that I'm comfortable and can pay attention. But I have an international client base because it is on the phone.
So a lot of the coaching work can actually be performed without necessarily being face-to-face,
absolutely,
I believe is what you're saying. Good point.
Would you put any value in doing the coaching face-to-face? Since you say you do 99.9% on the telephone, would you put value in doing the one-on-one type coaching?
Yes. Oh, one-on-one in person?
Yes.
Yes. I have met with some of my clients. I've got local Chicago clients I've never met face to face. There are some that we might meet in person on occasion, and what I found is because I'm so busy, if I have to take time out to meet someone somewhere, I need to charge them more because that takes away phone time.
Yes. Let me step back for a moment and get some scenarios. Could you give us some examples of your goals of your clients and what they wish to accomplish? Before you do that, you're listening to WKKC 89.3 FM. This is the Consumer's Eye. This morning we're talking with Simone Peer, a professional life coach, and we're getting some incredible good information to guide our listeners and so forth with regard to seeking out a professional life coach. So, Simone, once again, if you'd give us some examples of goals that your clients seek.
A lot of them seek financial independence. A lot of them seek success in their business.
Let's back up for a moment. I just want to focus on financial independence. We do a lot of shows like that. So do some of them may have spending problems? They come to you and say, you know, I just have to go to the mall every time I get my check, and after I've paid my bills, sometimes prior to I've paid my bills, I just have to go and spend my check.
They may not say that, but what they do come and
that's
say
what it boils down to.
is they've got debt. They may be under-earning and overspending.
Okay.
They've got goals beyond. They might be living check to check. There's a lot of check to checkers out there, and really working with them, we'll start looking at some basic, you know, budgets in terms of where's your money going, what do you really want for. Maybe you need to get a new job.
Interesting.
And I do make referrals to financial advisors, you know, people that can certainly help them really get focused on what it is to.
Okay. So that's a good one. Financial independence. Give us a couple of more.
Success in their business. Also a really big one is people who, they know that they're being called to something more, and they just don't know what it is, and they don't know how to get there, primarily because they don't know what it is. If they knew what it was, it's easier to get there. And then you got the ones who know what it is, but they feel so stuck in either their current position or their financial position, perhaps their relationship.
Good points.
So it's
interesting. Charles and I, some years ago, did a show about how none of us are really working in our major, what we really wanted to do. So I know you indicated to me earlier that you're also involved in dancing. And so forth. So you have had people who may come to you that are bankers or whatever and that really want to be modern dancers or work on Broadway and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah, or it could be someone, let's say I worked with a woman the other day and she's developing a multi-level marketing, network marketing company, as well as has a company in publishing and media. And when it came down to it, she wants to write. I'm like, well, what are you mucking around with all this other stuff for? I don't understand. If you want to do this, why are you focusing on that?
So you help a person kind of get focused and in accomplishing their goals. And I guess that leads me to asking you a little bit about the network of women entrepreneurs, because I take it in your line of work, you need some good contacts to refer people to and so forth and so on. Now, you're currently serving as president of the Network of Women Entrepreneurs. Why don't you tell us about the organization?
Oh, this is a fantastic organization. It's a small group. We're a hybrid group in that it's part leads-oriented, so there's about one. It's a non-compete group where there's one person per industry or area of expertise in an industry. And another part of that is that they're really focused on developing more intimate relationships between women entrepreneurs and business owners so that we can grow professionally,
yes,
both as women and business owners.
Good, very good. We have a caller, so let's take our caller. Good morning. Thank you for calling the Consumer's Eye.
Good morning. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. And
good
you?
Morning, Derek, and good morning, Simone, and good morning, Charles.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Simone, I have a question for you. When you have clients that will come to you and perhaps they are not working in an arena in which you are an expert, what resources do you use in order to coach them and guide them to where they want to be if you're not very familiar with that arena?
Well, one really cool thing about being a coach is that our job is to be the expert of not knowing. So that right there means that I'm just get really curious about you, and we can brainstorm and come up with what resources you need. I also can reach out into my networks and find other experts that can connect me or give me resources to recommend to clients as well.
I guess also that association that you mentioned earlier, mention that group again.
The Network of Women Entrepreneurs.
No, not the network, the coaches group.
Oh, the International Coach Federation.
International Coach Federation. I'm sure that they would also have some information and resources, et cetera.
And in addition, I'm also a faculty member for Coach U, which is an internationally based coach training program. And some of the things that I do is I reach out to my faculty and just let them know, like, hey, I'm looking for this kind of a coach. What recommendations do you have? Because I know that these people are qualified. They're training the best coaches in the world. They were my teachers, or some may be my students now.
Yes, Coach U. I like that.
You, yeah.
So, caller, were we able to help you in any way?
Yes, and I have one more question,
okay.
If I may.
Yes, ma'am.
Simone, in the initial consultation, is there a survey or something that you have put together to try and weed out exactly what it is that this person is seeking? Is this something that you've put together?
Yes, I actually took a lot of things from my training. We had extensive intake packages that we could work with, and I've narrowed it down to some key, about 5 or 6 questions that really work for me. And so what I do is I send that out in advance, and then if we have a sample session where we're kind of checking each other out and see if we're meant to work together, then I hone in on those questions at a deeper level, and then we see what it is you really want for, and if we are designed to work together to make that so.
All righty. Does that help you out a little bit?
Yes, sir.
Well, very good. Thank you for calling the Consumer's Eye.
Thank you.
Simone, you mentioned something that just struck me, a sample session. Talk to us about that, if you would, and then I'm going to go back into the network, the sample session.
Coaching is it's a relationship that really needs to click. So I need to meet with the person. They need to meet with me to see if we can dance together. And in that, what I first do is allow them to ask questions about me, about my training, about coaching, about the coaching process, whatever it is that they need to understand what this is about. And then we coach, because I think it's better understood through the experience than the marketing.
So now with the sample session, is that billed at the regular rate, or is that a discount, or is that at no charge? How do you?
If it's strictly just a sample, like let's get to know each other, there's no charge.
Okay, that's what I wanted to get. All right, now coming back, the Network of Women Entrepreneurs. That's a professional network, and you have people ranging from financial advisors, real estate brokers, life coaches, et cetera. Briefly tell us about that and when you meet.
We meet the fourth Friday of every month at the East Bank Club. It's a fantastic intimate group. We are open to the public for meetings, about 6 of our meetings a year. So we do presentations where we bring in guest speakers and have networking among our guests and members. We also have members-only meetings where we really look to increase the benefits for membership. So, for example, actually, in April, I was the presenter for our closed meeting, and I did a presentation on Cultivate Your Inner Coach so that these business women could bring some basic coaching skills into their organizations, into their relationships and lives, and do better. So kind of build each other up in business as women, as people. And we also host an annual Entrepreneurial Achievement Awards Breakfast in February. We just had our 15th annual.
Oh, interesting. Very
good.
Yeah,
it's really fabulous.
So that's the Network of Women Entrepreneurs. Simone Peer, professional certified life coach. I'd like for you to give out your contact information, your telephone number and website. If you'd repeat your phone number twice, please.
Okay, so Simone Peer, my number is 773-384-LOVE. 773-384-LOVE or 5683. And I also have 2 websites. One is alifeyoulove.com. It's you, the letter, not the word, alifeyoulove.com, as well as evolutionaryadventures.com. Evolutionaryadventures.com. Because in addition to life coaching, I'm also a coaching and leadership trainer. both for coaches as well as individuals who are seeking to grow themselves in their leadership.
Yes, very, very good. And I just love your phone number, 384-LOVE. Thank you very much for joining us. You've provided a wealth of information for the consumer's eye today. And once again, that's Simone Peer, 384-5683. 384-5683. You're listening to The Consumer's Eye, so we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about foreclosure and so much of this media fluff that you're getting about foreclosure. We're going to give you some real information that you can use. We'll be back in a moment. Do you have problems understanding utility bills? Are you fed up with skyrocketing gas bills and poor service from your companies? The Citizens Utility Board, CUB, is a nonprofit utility watchdog organization that has saved Illinois consumers over $5 billion. To find out how CUB can help you, call 1-800-669-5556. That's 800-669-5556.
Yo, what's cracking? This is Tone.
Yo, what's up? This is Shaq.
And we're the Hot Boys on Power 92.
Want to acquire the skills to be a disc jockey?
Hey, what's happening? I'm Trading Chocolate Jock on Power 92.
How about a radio or TV news announcer?
This is Cheryl Burton from ABC 7.
We're sportscasters.
This is Mark Gian Greco from ABC 7.
How about a radio or TV traffic reporter?
Hi, this is ABC 7's Roz Varen.
A media salesperson.
Hi, I'm Lee Montgomery, accounts manager for Power 92.
Music director.
Hi, this is Nia B., assistant music director for Soul 106.3.
The new Kennedy King College at 63rd and Halstead is offering training in media communications that in 2 short years can award you an associate in applied science degree that will set you up for great jobs and a possible career in media communications. For more information, call 773-602-5555. Registration is going on now. Your future success starts at Kennedy King College.
Support life presents their annual Breast Cancer Awareness Gospel Concert Saturday, May 17th from 4 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. at the United House of Prayer for All People, 4359 South State Street. Featured performers include Beverly Yvette, the James Sisters, Little Ash, the Tim and True Praise Chorale, and Pastor DeAndre Patterson, hosted by comedian Johnny Marshall and special guest Senator Maddie Hunter. Saturday, May 17th at the United House of Prayer for All People, 4359 South State Street, from 4 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. That's Beverly Yvette, the James Sisters, Little Ash, the Tim and True Praise Chorale, and Pastor DeAndre Patterson. For more information, you may contact Support Life at 630-888-5858. That's 630-888-5858. Come out and support breast cancer awareness.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
Hi, Mom.
Yo, Moms, what's up?
Who are you, and who are those girls?
I'm hip-hop's biggest star, and those are my bootylicious backup dancers.
Hey.
Don't mind us. We just chilling.
Why here? In my family room.
Because you haven't told us not to.
If you don't want your kids to watch it, block it. It's easy to be the boss of what your kids watch by blocking the television programming you might like but don't want them to see. To learn how, go to thetvboss.org. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and thetvboss.org.
I'm Mayor Richard M. Daley, and you're listening to my favorite college radio station, 89.3 WKKC, the official radio station of the City Colleges of Chicago.
You're listening to the all-new Consumer's Eye. If you have any questions concerning today's topic, feel free to call us at 773-488-9552. 488-9552. And now, back to Derek McNeil and Charles Young with the all-new Consumer's Eye, right here on WKKC 89.3 FM.
And we're back with the all-new Consumer's Eye. I'm Derek McNeil.
And I'm Charles Young.
In this segment, we're going to be talking about foreclosure. And for those of you who have a foreclosure problem, now is the time to turn your tape recorder on, grab your pen and your pencil. Our guest at this segment is Mr. Sandor Grossman. Mr. Grossman is a lawyer, He's a well-known securities attorney, a tax planning consultant in Chicago. He's dedicated much of his career to protecting the investment rights of senior citizens, retirees, working class Americans, and high net worth individuals. In addition to his law degree, Sandor has a master's degree in tax law from the John Marshall Law School in Chicago, has extensive experience in international accounting, auditing, and consulting. So thank you very much for joining us this morning, Mr. Grossman.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're going to be talking about foreclosure, which is, I guess, your new area of concentration. I know that you have been involved in extensive litigation in protecting investors' rights, and we have found a lot of people who have bought homes have really been sold a bill of goods, and so we're going to talk about that. Before I get started, though, I just want to acknowledge my very good friend who was the master of foreclosure law, the late Harold I. Levine. Mr. Levine kind of wrote the book on foreclosures and mortgages and suing and protecting the rights of the homeowner in our state. And he was never too busy to help you, whether if you were a lawyer, consumer, et cetera. So Harold I. Levine, we surely miss you. Anyway, foreclosure defense. A lot of times people are in foreclosure. First thing they'll do, they'll go and talk to a bankruptcy lawyer. This bankruptcy lawyer will recommend, we'll file you a Chapter 13. I teach in one of my continuing education classes to bankers, lawyers, and real estate brokers that when you have a Chapter 13 plan, you generally are going to fail, even worse, because you're going to have two mortgages. One, your regular payment, and two, the Chapter 13 payment that you need to make. So what you kind of concentrate in are actual defenses to foreclosure.
That is correct. What we do at my law office is we challenge the foreclosure complaint that is typically brought by the lenders themselves. We only use bankruptcy as a last alternative. The bankruptcy option is really how I describe it to my clients as the atomic bomb of defenses, and you only want to use it in the absolute last case scenario. So we try to stay away from Chapter 13s as well as Chapter 7s, and we focus on bringing a valid and solid defense to the foreclosure action that is what's pending and what is the homeowner's problem.
Let's talk about that. Homeowner receives first of all, generally, after 1 month, you missed your payment. Your phone is going to ring from your lender. After 2 months, your phone is going to ring even more. Then after 3 months, 90 days, generally, the lender will go and hire a lawyer. Then that lawyer will prepare a complaint, as you have just called it. That complaint will be served upon the homeowner. Now, if you would, tell us about what's one of the first things that the homeowner should do upon receiving this complaint.
Well, the first thing that a homeowner should do once they receive a complaint is to retain an attorney, much like myself. If it's not me or my office, somebody who does foreclosure defense, as opposed to someone who does foreclosure defense in the realm of filing a bankruptcy for you. It's so critical at the very beginning stages to retain an attorney. Unfortunately, most folks who are victims of the predatory lending and other foreclosure issues, they don't retain an attorney until it is way too late and their house is on the eve of sale for the sheriff's sale. So in the very beginning, we can help our clients the best if they hire us immediately and do not wait until the process has gone too far along.
Well, now you say that, but my question to you would be, if I'm in foreclosure, I'm there for a reason. That reason is probably that I did not have any money. I had they say that about 81% of all foreclosures are due to some type of medical tragedy. Okay, so that means that I may not have any money. So approximately how much would it cost to retain a lawyer to defend a foreclosure action?
Well, the costs are typically cheaper than what it would be to be paying the mortgage. Unfortunately, you are correct in the sense that most of the foreclosures are brought because of a medical event that happened to the family or to the breadwinner of that family. Now, however, most foreclosure clients that I see today are ready, willing, and able to pay their mortgage, but it's the mortgage companies will not accept any further mortgage payments because they have been late for a period of time.
Yes.
So they have the money, they're willing to pay it, and it's not that they're out of money, although you do see circumstances like that. So to answer your question, how much would it cost? We structure our fees based on the taking into account what the borrower or what the client can pay. So those are adjusted for on an individual basis.
Then you said something else about going to retain an attorney. My contention there would be most attorneys that there are very few attorneys that practice actual foreclosure defense work that I've come across in Illinois, particularly in Cook County. So then your next issue as a consumer, as a homeowner, would be to pose the appropriate questions to this guy or a young lady to ascertain if they really have some expertise in defending a foreclosure action.
Absolutely. It's
everybody now, forgive me for interrupting you, everybody now, oh yeah, I'm a real estate lawyer. What the hell is that?
A real estate lawyer could be someone who does real estate closings all the way down to construction law. It all depends. You really have to interview your attorney just like you would have to interview your attorney for any other specialty that you're looking for. You want somebody who's handled foreclosure defense cases from start to finish and someone who's very familiar, especially with federal law, because one of the largest defenses in these foreclosure claims is what is known as the Truth in Lending Act.
Yes.
So you really need a consumer-oriented attorney who knows the consumer law and the federal law with respect to formulating the defenses for that foreclosure action.
Yes, and let's talk about that. We're speaking this morning with Attorney Sandor Grossman, and we're talking about foreclosures, and we're talking about the foreclosure defenses. Attorney Grossman just brought up the TILA defense, Truth in Lending Act, which is a federal law passed by Congress. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Truth in Lending Act?
Well, the Truth in Lending Act has its roots back from the 1960s. And it was a federal law that was enacted by Congress to protect consumers across the country from unscrupulous vendors, so to speak. And the TILA, the Truth in Lending Act, encompasses all purchases that involve a security interest taken out on a consumer's home. So, for instance, if you have a refinance for your home, a refinance mortgage, that's what the Truth in Lending Act is geared to protect. It's geared to protect the consumer so he is absolutely knowledgeable about all the terms and conditions of that loan prior to going into that loan, because that consumer is putting up his single largest asset at risk, which is his home. So Congress enacted this law to make sure that the consumer is aware of the risks that he is taking with respect to refinancing his home or using his home as some sort of equity to finance some type of consumer purchase.
Yes, good point. Also, in the Truth in Lending Act, it defined and brought about what is known as today as APR in evaluating your interest rate versus the true or actual cost as calculated in the APR and so forth. You want to comment about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. One of the provisions and one of the purposes of the Truth in Lending Act is to inform the consumer the cost of that particular credit. So that's why whenever you are refinancing your home or you're financing a large purchase, typically over $25,000, you will have a statement which will give you what your AP, your true annualized percentage rate is, so that you can then take that document and shop around for the best interest rate. So you are an informed consumer and you know exactly how much that money is costing you to borrow.
Good point. You know, I have a lot of, as I teach the Truth in Lending Act and RESPA violations and so forth, one of the most common questions that it appears that consumers are misled about is that, you know, I bought this house, but I got 3 days to rescind. That is right, right? Why don't you comment about the three-day right of rescission and how that does not apply to your initial purchase and when it does apply?
Right. The three-day right of rescission will apply to purchases that are refinances on a primary residence. It does not apply to your first purchase or a construction loan. So if you bought your house and you constructed it, or this is, or you were dealing with your first mortgage, you do not have a 3-day right of rescission. However, when you go to refinance your home, which so many tens of thousands, if not millions of Americans did throughout the last 3 to 5 years, Congress wants you to know that you have 3 days to cool off, to not take that loan and risk your home as a security interest. So that is what you're talking about, is the 3-day right to rescind. However, what's very interesting is that that 3-day right of rescission can turn into actually 3 years. So depending on the circumstances of the particular loan transaction, you can have 3 years to rescind that transaction after you consummated it.
Why don't you define that's interesting 3 years that you're referring to? Because most consumers aren't aware of it, and most of them don't use that 3-day rescission.
Most folks don't even know about the 3-day right of rescission, much less the 3-year right of rescission. That's absolutely true. And that's one of our biggest strategies for foreclosure defense. When you have a home equity loan, or you've refinanced your home and you are giving these closing documents at closing by the title agency or the closer, you're supposed to get specific documentation regarding your notice of right to cancel that transaction. As we were speaking about earlier, you have 3 days to cancel that transaction, it's a cooling off period. However, if the lender or the title company, when you went in and you closed that loan and you signed that 2.5-3 inches thick of paperwork that formulated your home equity loan or your refinance, in that closing packet are supposed to be particular documents. If those documents are not in there, your 3-day right of rescission turns into a 3-year right of rescission.
Interesting. And that's what's significant, because many people who do refinance transactions and home equity loans generally do not use a lawyer. And so therefore, they're hit with a lot of this change in the rate in which they were quoted, and they have an adjustable, they have a loan that does not take out for taxes and insurance and et cetera.
Well, absolutely correct. And that's why it's so imperative that consumers actually do have an attorney review these loans. As you are correct, in the standard trade in the business is that you only have an attorney on your initial purchase. Unfortunately, the banks and the lenders don't encourage you to have an attorney on the refinance of the or the taking out of a home equity loan. In that documentation, if there's not specific documents or dates, or if the APR is off by a certain percentage, or the amount financed is off by certain amounts, certain tolerances that are set forth by the Truth in Lending Act, that 3-day right to rescind that loan turns into 3 years. That's a very powerful tool.
Yes.
Because if you have somebody who's in someone who's in foreclosure, this is a defense to that foreclosure action that they may not know about. They can actually rescind the whole transaction, thereby voiding the security interest in the property, which thereby throws out the entire foreclosure.
Interesting. Now, there are other defenses that are available. RESPA, Real Estate Settlement Procedure Act violations and so forth. Would you comment about any of that work that you may do?
Well, the RESPA is the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, is an act whereby the consumer is to be notified whenever there's a change of the servicing agent of his mortgage. Too often times today, someone will take out a home mortgage or refinance it with lender A. By the second month into their mortgage, lender B, C, or D may own the paper on that. So the RESPA is part of which is geared towards making sure the consumer is aware of who owns the note, which is one portion of it, and then who services the note, i.e., who to send a check to.
Yes.
Yes. Because
and many consumers have just gotten, I mean, their taxes are screwed up, their insurance hasn't been paid, and just so many violations. I'd like for you to talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to WKKC 89.3 FM. This is the all-new Consumer's Eye. We're speaking at this point with Mr. Sandor Grossman, an attorney who deals with foreclosure defense. And we've kind of gave out some defenses with regards to truth in lending, and now we're talking about RESPA and some of the violations therein, RESPA being an acronym. I always talk about real estate is full of acronyms, the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, a federal law passed by Congress. With regards to RESPA, if your loan is sold or transferred, you are required to there are certain notice requirements, one of the items in RESPA. There are also certain servicing requirements, as Mr. Grossman is indicating. Go ahead, Mr. Grossman.
Right, and you have a right to know to with whom you need to send your check, or to with whom is holding your escrow money, or to with whom is who is distributing your tax that is being held on your behalf. You find this out by writing a written, what's called a written qualification to the servicing agent, and they have 60 days to inform you of who is the owner of your note and to with whom you are obligated to send payments to and who is in charge of your escrow. If the servicing company does not respond to you within 60 days, they're subject to federal statutory violations, monetary violations, which can amount to varying degrees on the severity of the violation. Some of the other, but the RESPA, though, however, is not entirely, that is not a defense to a foreclosure action. That's just a violation in and of itself, a monetary violation that we go after. The real strong defenses in the foreclosure actions are challenging the assignment. Too oftentimes what happens is a plaintiff's law firm who brings the foreclosure action will bring it under the name of the entity that actually owns the note. That would be, let's say, for instance, lender A. But this is tantamount, this also relates to the RESPA issue. The homeowner doesn't know who lender A is. The homeowner only knows who lender B is, because that's who they took the loan out with. So if there's not an assignment, if the plaintiffs can't prove that there was an assignment between lender B and lender A, then the case is thrown out because lender A has no standing.
Interesting. Good point. Now, with regards to the various foreclosure defenses, and we need to respond to that complaint as soon as possible, you pointed that out. What about challenges in accounting of the lender's amount that they allege that you owe and the law firm's amount that they allegedly have billed?
Absolutely.
Harold Levine taught me. Let me tell you a story for our listeners. Many times the attorneys that represent these banks, they've been involved in collusion, and they have overbilled the bank, which in turn will overbill you. So what happens is Mr. Levine had a paragraph whereby he wanted the attorneys, the lender's attorney, to account for their fees. So how did you arrive at a bill of $5,864? Who performed the work? How many hours of the work was performed by a lawyer versus a paralegal versus a secretary? And you need to be able to document and account for that. So that's something that during the past, I don't know if it's gotten any better now with the attorneys and their billing practices and lenders and their accountings. In other words, saying your redemption amount and so forth.
You definitely want to seek that information out. And if the plaintiff's attorney can't produce it, they're not going to get those fees. So too often times, more than not, the foreclosure client will move out of his house in the middle of the night and not seek to obtain legal counsel. So those questions do not get asked as often as they should. They get rubber stamped because the clients will move out and never challenge the foreclosure. But if you do retain an attorney and you challenge the foreclosure and you ask these questions that you were talking about, if the plaintiff's counsel cannot produce what their fees are and how they generated those fees, much less also have a verification of debt from the mortgage company itself, then you'll never get answers to those questions. But when you ask those questions and they can't produce the answers to it, that's a genuine foreclosure defense.
Good point. Let me ask you, signing under duress, is that, and what's the status of that now? Many people will say, well, you know, I didn't know what I was signing or et cetera, when they initially signed particularly a lot of these refinance or home equity loan transactions, even a lot of purchases, especially that are rehab-type properties.
Well, what we've been claiming is that the broker, the person who had the client sign the refinance documents or the home closing or the construction loan documents, has a fiduciary duty to that client. And to put somebody, for example, I have a client who worked part-time at a hardware store making just over minimum wage, and this is part-time. The broker put him into three different investment loans for investment property over several million dollars worth of property and debt.
Let me get this straight. Somebody make about $8 an hour, you're saying, was able to acquire several million dollars worth of debt.
The broker convinced him that it was a good deal because he would make money based on the rental of these properties. So my argument is that while my client went along with this, he went along with the trust and advice given to him by a bank telling him that this is how to make money, how he's to move up in the world. This is how people do it. This is how the quote-unquote rich people do it. And he breached his fiduciary duty to my client because he sold him a bill of goods. And now he's in foreclosure, and he's on the hook for a few million dollars worth of real estate.
Interesting.
Making $8 an hour part-time.
Why don't you, if you would, please, in our remaining moments, I'd like for you to give us a few tips. A person is in foreclosure and they're seeking a lawyer. If you could give us three questions that they could ask of this lawyer upon their initial consultation.
One of them would be to ask the lawyer of most importance is, does the lawyer have experience dealing with the Federal Truth in Lending Act? Because that is by far the most important defense in a foreclosure case. So the lawyer must have knowledge of the Federal Truth in Lending Act, of Regulation Z, and of the different real estate provisions such as RESPA you were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Secondly, the lawyer must have experience in dealing in going up against these foreclosure mills, is what we call them. There are a number of plaintiffs firms out there who are hired by the banks to bring these foreclosure cases, and they are very aggressive, very assertive, and they will steamroll right over anybody who they can in the courtroom. So the second most important aspect is to ask the attorney how his experience in actual litigation is. That is by far the second most important aspect of it. The third point would be, how far is the attorney willing to go to help you? Will he look beyond just a bankruptcy solution? Will he look to litigation? Will he consider filing in federal court instead of state court? Make sure that the attorney is ready, willing, and able to perform a multitude of functions for you other than providing you with a cookie-cutter approach to solve your problem.
Great information there, particularly that last information that you talked about in interviewing an attorney. You know, in the near future, we're going to have you back and like to expand upon your analysis thereof of some of the questions to pose. In fact, if you could put together something in writing like that, that would be very useful for our listeners and consumers. You've been listening to attorney Sandor Grossman. Mr. Grossman practices primarily with regards to foreclosure defense. What we'd like to get from you now, Mr. Grossman, is your telephone number, if you could repeat it twice and provide your website.
Thank you. My telephone number you could reach us is at 312-236-9800. Again, that's 312-236-9800. And we do have a website. It is www.foreclosurestoplaw.com. That's the word foreclosurestoplaw.com.
We'd like to thank you for joining us this morning. What great and resourceful information that you have provided, and we definitely want to have you back.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Consumer's Eye. What we've been talking about today, our first guest, Simone Peer, a life coach, our second guest, Attorney Sandy Grossman, talking about foreclosure defense. And I think that that defense work is just very, very valuable. And we want to avail our listeners to that kind of information and so forth. On our upcoming shows, we're going to be talking about, on next week, we're going to have a legal roundtable. We're going to have people from the Legal Assistance Foundation, from the Illinois Attorney General's Office, Consumer Fraud Division, so forth. And then on our following Saturday, it's going to be very interesting. We're going to be talking about how to sue your lawyer. And our guest, Attorney Elliot Schiff, who is one of the country's foremost authorities on suing lawyers. So we look forward to doing that show. We're also going to have the executive director of HALT, which is the nation's largest consumer organization of legal consumers based in Washington, D.C. So on that note, what an exciting show this morning. On that note, I'd like to thank the WKKC station management. I'd like to thank our engineer, Mr. Keith Reed, for a great job this morning. Most importantly, we would like to thank you for listening to The Consumer's Eye. Good morning.
Good morning.